Everybody can do something.
For news you need to know, listen to Off the Hour, weekdays from 5 to 6 p.m. From Montreal, across Canada, and around the world, we have it all. Hard-hitting reports, eyewitness interviews, and in-depth documentaries exploring the issues without the corporate spin doctoring.
You know, there are two ways to go through life. One is to believe everything. The other is to believe nothing. Both ways avoid thinking.
Catch the news on Off the Hour, weekdays from 5 to 6 p.m. on CKUT 90.3 FM.
If you're looking for something to read, look no further. The Read Quebec Book Fair is back for its 8th year, today and tomorrow. They've got all the latest titles from Anglophone publishers in the city, as well as readings and industry talks. I stopped by Concordia's McConnell Building to learn more.
Rebecca West. I'm the Executive Director of the Association of English Language Publishers of Quebec, also known as ALEC, and we're here today with the Read Quebec Book Fair.
Yeah, so tell me more about the event. What's going on? There's lots of folks going from table to table. There's rooms set up for events. What kind of stuff do you have here at Concordia campus?
Yeah, so it's a book fair that started off, I think, quite modestly 8 years ago. We used to hold it in the library where our office is, the Atwater Library, and it almost feels like we've grown into a small festival at this point. So we have over 20 local publishers selling their wares, their beautiful books. By local authors, and over 50 local authors who are here participating in panels and workshops and signing books and really just chatting with folks. I think that's one of the beautiful things about this event. It's really become kind of like a community hub that people look forward to. We have lots of people wanting to get into publishing who are working in publishing, emerging writers, aspiring writers, and it's a great place to connect with the literary community.
Yeah, what's the literary community like in Quebec? I know Montreal, it's a Francophone city, yes, but it has this small but I think really mighty English language publishing and magazine industry that, for my eyes at least, like it seems to punch above its weight.
I think that's a really good way of putting it, yeah. It's been around for a while. Some of our members, VQuid Press, just celebrated their 50th anniversary. McGill Queen's University Press has been around for a long time. But I think the beautiful thing that we're seeing at ALAC is that our membership seems to grow a little bit every year. We're over 30 members now. Some of whom have been in business for a long time and others who are just getting into publishing. So I think that it's really nice to see that renewal and maybe not direct mentorship, so to speak, but kind of a bit of a passing of the torch from the veteran publishers and newer ones coming up.
One of those veteran publishers is VQuid Press, a Montreal staple. I stopped by their table to get the latest from co-publisher Simon Dardick.
We're sort of the granddaddy of indie publishers in the city, Anglo-English publishers. 50 years of publishing books by Montreal authors and authors across the country, poetry, fiction, nonfiction, and noir fiction.
So tell me, you said you're 50 years young. Congratulations. What do you have coming out this year to celebrate this big milestone?
Well, it's a book we just launched actually earlier this week at the Word Bookstore. It's a book called Spirits in the Dark by H. Nigel Thomas. And it's actually a 30th anniversary edition of his book that he brought out 30 years ago. But it was about a gay writer, a gay protagonist in the book. And the audience didn't know what to do with that book 30 years ago. And now, with an introduction by someone called Kai Kello, an appreciation of Nigel Thomas, and an afterword by the author, it's being totally rediscovered and probably do better than the first edition many, years ago.
You can hear it in the background, but the McConnell Building atrium was full of people checking out the fair, friends running into one another. Something that Rebecca West says is part of the joy of holding events like these.
So, yeah, I guess just hearing that people seem to be, happy to be able to connect, even though, we're talking about being sort of post-pandemic. I think there still is that, urge and, nice feeling of being able to gather in person and hold a book in your hand before buying it, flip through it, very different than, an online experience.
Yeah, so would you say then that the event is not just for people in the industry, but also for, the general public who's just maybe itching to get out and see what the newest Montreal reads are?
Yeah, totally. I think for independent publishers especially, it is sometimes a little trickier to get their titles out there. They don't have the same marketing budgets as the multinationals. When you walk into an Indigo or a really big bookstore, they may not be the first titles you see. But yeah, such a strength and breadth of stuff that's being published here. There's certainly something for any curious reader. We've got publishers, especially Drawn and Quarterly, Pow Pow, doing graphic novels and comics. Yeah, I would say across the 20 publishers, there's everything from children's books to poetry. And a series of events happening tomorrow for families. We've got Billy Mervais, local artist, who will be leading a few workshops on creating comics and writing postcards and making monster heads and wonderful things. And we're also really excited for the first time to be hosting a live podcast recording with Dr. Linda Mora, who has a podcast called Getting Lit with Linda, a literary podcast, fittingly. And we'll have Catherine Hernandez, author of Scarborough, and Eva Crocker, who just published Back in the Land of Living, doing the podcast, and then followed by a screening of Scarborough, the film based on Catherine's book. So, yeah, if you just want to browse or, come sit in on a talk, there's something for everyone.
If there was one thing I heard chatting with people at the fair, it was this.
I love to read in Montreal.
If you love to read in Montreal too, you can check out the Read Quebec Book Fair on Saturday, November 4th from 11 to 6 at 1400 de Maisonneuve West. I'm Jules Pigeal. Thanks for listening.
There's a lot going on in the world today. See how it affects Montreal's Black and Caribbean community. Read the community contact. News, features, opinions, music reviews, cultural events, and so much more. Our voices, our perspectives, our community. Published every 2 weeks, pick it up at your favorite community spot or visit us online at our new and dynamic website, mtlcommunitycontact.com. Easy to navigate and lots to enjoy. Archived issues also on the site and available on the web. That's mtlcommunitycontact.com. Stay in contact.
You're listening to CKUT 90.3 FM. This is Off the Hour. And this is also the first installment of the News Collective show. Yeah, we've had some technical issues, but we are here and we have a lot to talk about. I will leave it to Sequoia. I am Titouan. Yeah, so how about you introduce yourself first, guys?
Yeah, so we just recorded 15 minutes of our episode, but we realized that we weren't on air, so I'm so, so sorry about that, but this is radio. This is the beauty of radio, can you call it?
Exactly.
Yeah, this, you know, if anything, it's authentic. It's genuine. So it's human. Yeah. So yeah, welcome. This is Off the Hour. I'm Sequoia. This is my first time on live radio, so I'm very excited. Yeah, I'm a station volunteer here. I am in philosophy and poli-sci, and yeah, very excited and happy to be here with my lovely co-hosts.
Yeah, I'm Wendy. I'm also a station volunteer, and I study English and history at McGill. Yeah, I'm excited to be with the News Collective and like have this community. So yeah, we'll be hearing more from us, hopefully, with less technical difficulties.
Yes.
Yeah. So I am Titouan. I'm also a volunteer at CKUT. I've been hosting All Things McGill on Monday, so you can hear me there. Yeah. What's the program of the rest of our 45 minutes?
Why don't I introduce the tuition hikes again? So just to give a bit of context about the Quebec recently announced that the minimum tuition for out-of-province students will increase from $8,992 to $1,700 for students starting in fall 2024. So we're going to be spending a bit of time talking about that. This policy is part of an effort to lower the amount of English spoken in Quebec and fund Francophone universities. It applies to undergraduate and professional graduate degrees, but not to research-based graduate degrees. And it doesn't affect currently enrolled students, but it infringes on the ability of thousands of prospective Canadian students to attend university in Quebec. And this is a non-consensual tuition hike, which risks setting precedent for the government to do the same to Quebec and international student tuition. And there has been a lot of mobilization against this tuition hike. There was the At Blue Fall protest organized a rally last Monday, and SMU has organized a common front with PGSS, MCSS, MCGSS, the CSU, and the Bishop Student Rep Council to be leaders on the issue. SMU has also hosted a town hall with students to discuss the impact of the tuition fee increase. And yeah.
Yeah, so, well, just on that, so Titouan and I were at the big protest that happened. When was that? On Monday.
Yes.
Yeah. And so I guess just like, one thing that really stood out to me was like, I showed up and like, all I saw was just like a wave of purple. Like there was just like so much purple there, and purple is like Bishop's color. So like Bishop's University, kind of like a smaller, you know, one of the three English universities, but definitely much smaller than Concordia and McGill. Anyway, so there's a huge like Bishop's representation, which I found a little surprising. I mean, I guess I shouldn't be surprised, but, you know, I knew that the protest was going to end up in front of McGill, and so I just was like, okay, it's going to be, like, a McGill protest, but, Yeah, there was like Bishop Chance and everything. So there was still like McGill people there. But yeah, that was like, was really interesting. What did you think of it?
Yeah, I think they were also very seen and visible because they were wearing that purple, whereas the rest of the people were not necessarily wearing the university colors. But I think also demonstrate that they are going to be impacted and they know it. Mm-hmm. So they're showing up, even though this is mostly students. Like, you could tell that they were organized. Like, they were all wearing their old Bishop beanies and they had, like, signs and stuff. So, I mean, we're only getting into the discussion, but it's going to impact the three Anglophone universities drastically.
Mm-hmm. Which is, I mean, it is interesting, like, how much school pride Bishop has, too. Yeah. And, like, I wonder if that has to do with the fact that it's just a small university. But, like, you know, you don't see, like, McGill people, like, showing up and decked out in McGill merch. Like, you don't see that.
Yeah, you don't see that, like anywhere.
Anywhere.
I think it might be because it's a university, you know, I don't know. To me, it feels like a campus university, whereas McGill and Concordia are more into the city. So it's like we don't only identify with the university, but also with Montreal in general.
Mm. Well, it's so big, too. Like, McGill's so big. Like, you know, you hear people say, like, oh, I just feel like a number.
Yeah.
You know, so it can sometimes feel like that. But despite that, I do feel like students are rallying around this issue, you know, despite some of the discomfort maybe some people feel, you know, being prideful about McGill or whatever. Mm. But yeah, it seems like this
point.
Is something like people are coming together for, because I think they recognize it's like a bigger issue that's going to impact people, you know.
Yeah. I was talking with Lola, who's also part of the News Collective, and their campaigns coordinator was SMU, and they were talking about how like it's difficult to get people to, like, because the people that are going to be affected are not at McGill or they're not here. Yeah. It's all, like, in the future, you know, like, people who are going to be applying. It's hard to, like, you really just have to care about the future students that are going to be coming here.
Right?
It's hard to just be, like, you see the impact directly.
Oh, that's such a good point.
So I feel like maybe, yeah, that's a...
Totally. I was kind of scared that the demonstration on Monday would not bring a lot of people for that reason, because current students, people that are, you know, that are currently in the city are not necessarily impacted. And that's actually what I heard from people I was talking to there, that they were not themselves impacted, but they were still showing up for others because they were like in a special program or just at university in general. And they knew that this hike, if it had happened for them, they would have made all their plan. And so, yeah, they knew it was impacting others. So they were showing up for that and for them.
Yeah. And also, like, there were a lot of people who were not in school at the protest, too. That was interesting.
That too,
it kind of was like an older crowd almost. Like, there were a lot of students, but there were also, like, I think a lot of, like, Anglo rights defenders there. Like, there was a lot of like anti Bill 96 like signs, and anyway, so there's like, it's interesting like what these measures can, like, we can like pull kind of certain like advocacy groups like out of their you know circles. So anyway, so it's so there's a lot of like Anglo people there, I guess.
It makes sense.
Yeah,
because I mean it's related to just, like, Quebec policy in general. I don't know if that's a topic we want to get into, but,
into it if you want.
It's going to impact, like, the city as a whole. It's, like, economics and, like, its population. And, yeah, it's just, I feel like it's in line with the current Quebec government.
Professor canceled class for the protest, which I've never had a professor cancel class for, like, any protest. So,
but that was the one.
Yeah. this is, I mean, it was great. Yeah.
Wow. I wonder if people went.
Yeah, me too.
But yeah. So like, well, we got this email from Who was it from, actually? This was from, oh, Deep Saini, who is the principal and vice chancellor. And yeah, we've been getting a lot of emails from McGill about this, and it's very clear that they're very upset with this policy. Like, it's interesting, you know, like, I mean, McGill as a university in general, I think, likes to weigh in about things going on in the world and policies, which is, like, interesting, you know, sometimes for better or for worse. But yeah, so they clearly are very against this. Like, right from the start, they were like, we think this is an awful policy and it's really going to affect our university. And the latest one was kind of just like looking at some of the potential impacts that it would have on McGill and some that I just didn't really consider.
Yeah. Like, it also makes sense that McGill is, you know, kind of scared of it. But I because I guess that was the point, really. Concretely, such a legislation would only drive down the people, the number of Anglophone in university and therefore in Montreal, which I kind of understood as the point of such legislation, because it's definitely not a way to improve French speaking and French and learning French for the Anglophones coming here to study.
Yeah. What do you think of that, Wendy?
Yeah, I think it definitely deters people from trying to learn French, and like it can't. It's already difficult, I think, for Anglophones to feel like accepted here. So instead of, you know, like encouraging them and making it easier for them to learn French, it just will make it harder. And we were talking about the Francicization programs and how that's getting harder to access. Quebec just implemented new requirements for temporary foreign workers. They're requiring that temporary foreign workers, except those who work on farms, have to pass a French test if they want to stay in the province longer than 3 years. And it's also just difficult if you have to work or go to school full time to enroll in these really intensive programs where you can't miss more than a few classes in order to pass.
On the like temporary foreign workers thing, like you have to pass the oral French exam level 4, which is like conversational French. Like, it's a pretty high bar, and you know, like, it's just going to mean that a lot of temporary foreign workers just kind of get thrown out of the province if, like, after their 3 years, if they want to stay there for longer than 3 years, they're going to get tossed out. So, you know, this is just like yet it's another terrible. Kind of, yeah, like, but I mean, at the same time, I mean, I was speaking to you guys about this earlier, like, I don't think that the tuition hike and the, you know, diverting funds away from, you know, the English universities towards the French ones, like, I don't personally think that that is a very effective way, or I almost feel like it's, like, scapegoating the issue of, like, the decline of French in Quebec. I don't think it's, like, the most effective way, and I also think that it, like, just disproportionately harms people, so, like, but at the same time, I also totally understand the concern about the decline of French and how just anecdotally it almost feels like French speakers overstate the issue and English speakers understate the issue. Like, I do so I did French immersion growing up until like grade 9, I think. And so I was like, I could speak French, you know, I did like a lot of nearly a decade of schooling in French mostly. And then I came here and I made like almost no effort to try and like really improve my French. And one of my friends from back home who also did French immersion, same level as me, totally went the opposite way. And she's like, is like pretty much fluent in French. And, you know, anyway, so it's interesting how I feel like I should have applied myself more and I should have like actually tried. And, you know, I think there's a lot of people who are in the same boat as me who like really wanted to improve their French but didn't. So anyways, I am sympathetic to the fact that like you know, newcomers who, not newcomers necessarily, but like, you know, let's say like students from out of province who come here and just totally are like, well, yeah, I don't really care about your culture. I don't really care about the French. Sorry. Like, I'm in, you know, I'm going to do my thing, whatever. Like, I do understand that, like, there is kind of a culture that you need to be respectful of and, you know, aware of. So, yeah. Yes. I don't know if that came across. But
yes, definitely.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think I'm in the same boat where I came and I thought I was going to work on my French, but I did not make much improvement. And I feel, like, really bad about that. Like, my neighbor, I thought, I feel so bad that I can't, like, speak French to her. But she's, like, super nice, but it's just, like, in my head, I was like, oh, no, she's going to hate me.
You feel the shame so much.
Yeah, like, I'm so ashamed. But, yeah, how do you guys feel about, I know, Titouan, you speak French very well,
yeah,
but.
I'm from France, so, yeah, it's definitely not really something I think about, like, in my daily life in the city, at the store and everything. I'm definitely interacting in French. So, yeah, I mean, still, I don't think it's that legislation of increasing tuition. And it's definitely not a way to increase French fluency among newcomers.
Yeah.
That's a very hot take, but, like, mandatory French class, you know, like in partnership with the university would be a better way to at least introduce people to speaking French. So, yeah, I feel like there's a million ways to promote French speaking.
Yeah.
And also at the protest, there were people telling me that anyway, even that currently, you know, stay in Quebec if you don't speak French, you know, after graduating is very hard because there are already requirements on speaking French for many, many jobs. So that's already forcing students out of the province, because that's also one of the arguments that the Quebec was putting forward, that students were studying in English in Quebec, and that the Quebec government was subsidizing their studies, and that they were leaving the province. But I guess we need to keep in mind that there are not necessarily jobs that they can apply to and have because they don't speak French. So, you know, one way to fix that would be to make them learn French to a certain extent. And that, that tuition hike does not tackle that problem and not at the source. So, yeah.
Such a great point.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, just on that, I mean, there was this article in CBC, and it reads like McGill shells $50 million French program after Quebec out of province tuition hike. Again, okay, so it's a little bit misleading. They are pausing it. They're putting on pause, but it is a little bit ironic, I guess, that it's like, okay, so this is a measure that was supposed to kind of protect the French language, and the first thing that happens is that McGill's like, okay, we're cutting this because, you know, austerity measures or whatever, like, we need to make cuts to something. This is the first thing to go. So it's like, wow, that was the first thing to go.
I think there was a very strong stance on McGill's hand to just, like, cut the French program, because I guess it was also such a big investment, so it could be, like, a clear sign. And since it was also about French, there was a very clear statement to the Quebec government that, you know, this their tuition hike that they had not announced to universities before, prior to announcing to it to everybody else, was going to impact them and their financial resources. So,
But, also, it's so stupid because, I mean, Quebec is not the only place that speaks French, and it's going to impact not only, like, you know, Anglo out-of-province people, but, you know, people like Titouan, who's from France, right? And who people who speak French in other countries and provinces.
If we want to talk about our own little take on the thing and our own little experience. Like me as a French student, I pay the out of province rate. Mm-hmm. And so currently it's still very expensive, you know, but to compare it to French schools, it's still slightly cheaper to like the big expensive schools that we have, like the business schools that are very expensive. So, yeah, so, you know, it, that was still a choice that I made to come here. And with if I had to pay like the 17K tuition that's coming up,
absolutely not.
I would have not come. And so, yeah, it's definitely impacting the French people, the French students, because I think it's maybe one third of the McGill population, or maybe it was just the arts faculty, but it's a big number of people even at McGill, so they speak fluent French. I guess like me, they are very happy to interact in French in the city, but they still coming here to study in English, really.
Yeah. I mean, Concordia said it would lose 90% of its out-of-province students. I mean, I would imagine, like, I mean, that's, I'm, they've just run the numbers on that, but I'm sure it would be, like, a very similar number for McGill or Bishops or whatever, you know, just, like, if you see that your tuition has doubled and that there are, like, how many other universities across Canada where you can, where it's not doubled? Like, it's kind of a no-brainer. Like, I personally would definitely not have come here if the tuition was really that high. I'm also an out-of-province student from Ontario, and
me like, too. Just
no.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's, yeah.
Do you guys plan on staying here after you graduate?
Yeah, this is something I've been thinking about so much. People ask me this all the time. I mean, I'm also very close to the end of my degree, so people are always on me, what are you gonna do, what are your plans, what are your post-grad plans, my favorite question. Yeah, I mean, and my answer every time is I love the city, like I love it here, it's awesome, I have roots here, like I feel like I've like, you know, like I have a network, I have friends, I kind of like know the history and culture and layout of the whole city, and which is like so ideal when you graduate, right? You're kind of like launching yourself into the world. Like it's nice to kind of, you know, at least know a few people. And so my natural instinct is like, of course I need to be here, but I'm also not like a bilingual person. I can speak French. I can understand French very well. Speaking, you can definitely tell I'm not like a native French speaker. Mm-hmm. I'm sure if I like really like put my back into it, you know, I could probably get up to a level where I could, you know, use French in the workplace, but it's really something I'm thinking about, you know. Wow, like, is it actually feasible for me to get a job here? Yeah, so I think that if, I mean, I would love to, and I think it's really just about, okay, how willing am I to, like, really put in the work to become super comfortable with French? I would love to. I mean, I don't see that as a detriment at all. I actually think that's amazing. Like, it would be so great. It's such an asset to be bilingual in Canada, you know? And so I don't see it as a bad thing. I see it as a really good thing. And so I would love to stay here. I think it's just about, yeah, I really do have to like get that French up, but I would love to stay here. So yeah. How about you?
I'm kind of in the same boat as you. Like, I also really love this city, and I feel like I have a community here, and like people that I'd be really sad to like leave. It's just it's just kind of scary thinking about, you know, like you're having to make a living, and if your language is not, you know, good enough, maybe that'll like make your job prospects you know, harder. So it's definitely still something I'm thinking about, but I don't know.
How about you, Titouan?
I'm also loving the city.
Yeah,
I love the ambiance, you know, the culture. Coming here as a French person, it's it's very enjoyable because it's different, and yet there's like this little French European vibe that makes it way more, I don't know, attractive than the rest of North America. But it's true that, you know, I'm looking at master's program, and I don't think I'm impacted by the tuition hike then, because I think I'm paying, I would be paying the Quebec rate. You know, that's, you know, I don't, you know, it doesn't really change my plans, the tuition hike then.
Is that because you're like a French citizen?
Because I'm a French citizen. And that's one aspect of the agreement between French, France and Quebec. So I'm definitely interested in staying. I love the city, but it's, I don't know, it's weird for me because I speak French fluently and I'm already interacting in French. So, you know, I feel I'm a bit outside of that conversation. But at the same time, I came here to study in English, you know, like, so it's, yeah, I don't know on, on what foot I'm staying, really.
You know, this is such a, like, it's a little bit of a side note, but I think that, so McGill currently only has partnerships with France and Belgium, right?
And Quebec.
And Quebec. Like, do you know how many other countries are French speaking? It's like kind of strange to think about. It's like, well, if you, like, do you actually care about, like, inviting French international students, like French speaking international students? Because if they did, I don't understand why they don't have partnerships with like other countries other than those, like those two. But
I mean, so, you know, it's, yeah, very could be
hypocritical.
Switzerland, so many countries in Africa.
Exactly.
There's a lot of other places, but it's I don't know. I feel
it's
like
interesting.
Check yourself.
Okay, so I know we're, I just wanted to mention this. We kind of skipped over the whole email thing, but like, so some of the, like how McGill will be impacted, they said that some faculties will lose all of their students with no ability to replace them, which is like,
all out of province students, right?
I think so. Like, I think that's, think that's what they're referring to.
All the out of province.
Sorry, that was unclear. I mean, that was unclear in their email, but but like that includes like the Schulich School of Music, which is already kind of a small, you know, faculty. 40% of them are out of province students. Like some of these like faculties are just going to be decimated.
I mean, you know? My cousin was looking into it because it was so much cheaper than other school in North America. And so I haven't talked to them yet, but I'm definitely thinking that he and his family are reconsidering their plans because, that's a big increase in tuition.
Random, but I don't know. Like, I wonder how they calculated it. Is it based on, like, do they look at the students, like, and their families, like, level of income? I don't know.
That's a great, that's a great point. Yeah, I do wonder how they, like, how they,
in the email they had like quite incredible numbers. They were like, they had a range that they that they could replace the out of province students. 90 they could maybe replace 90% of them or 20% of them. So it's like
that's such a huge range.
How are you getting these numbers? It's definitely lacking clarity and
I mean, I am actually like very curious to see what the numbers are gonna be like. I mean, like I felt like a similar way when McGill was going completely online. I was like, who in their right mind would like go to school, go to like Zoom University or whatever? I just, but I mean, people still did, like a lot of people did. Our tuition went up that year even and we still had, you know, a full entering class. So maybe that's not really a fair comparison, but you know,
I guess the idea was that it would be temporary. So
But and also, I mean, this is like, this is pretty it's much more extreme, right? It's like a doubling of tuition. But it'll be very, very interesting, yeah, to see the numbers. Mm-hmm. And then the other thing that the email mentioned was that job reductions could reach between 600 and 700 layoffs, which is absolutely bonkers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
that's a lot of people.
I feel like one of the things we failed to mention is that the increase of the tuition, like the money is not going to McGill.
Exactly.
It's going to, like, they are pretty much keeping the same amount or maybe even less than that, than what they currently get. And the rest is supposed to fund Francophone universities. So it's going to create a huge gap in their finances, especially if they have less students coming. So they're going to figure that out and make some cuts. And apparently, they're planning to already or looking into what they can cut. And I think you were just going to mention the number of jobs that might disappear or something.
Yeah. I mean, like, that's a good point. I think that's like something to keep our eyes on, which is, okay, if revenue is going to drop, like, what is going to get cut? Who is going to get cut? Like, what kind of funding is going to get slashed? Who's the first to go? And like, oftentimes when this happens, you know, it's like some of the most like marginalized, you know,
the arts.
Yeah.
I mean, like, we were just talking about the School of Music. Yeah. That's very much it.
Yeah. Yes. Or I don't even know. I don't really know how the finances work, but you know, like it is like important to keep an eye on like who's going to be impacted if their like revenue drops significantly, you know? Anyhow. Yeah, should we, like, take a little music break? This is a song that I recently discovered. I don't know when it came out, like, not that long ago. But I really liked it, so we'll be back in a bit.
Is there a bit more about The Honest, or we're keeping that for after?
I don't really know too much about the artist, but I've been listening to their album, so
All right, we'll let you discover the single. Thank you.
on the mic.
And we are back. You're listening to Of the Hour on CKUT 90.3 FM. It is 5:50, and it is the first installment of the News Collective show. We've been discussing the tuition hike announced by the Quebec government for the past 30 minutes, I would say. We had some technical issues at the beginning, but we're glad that the show is going on. Now we're going to switch to the Redpath McLennan complex renovation. Mm-hmm. Sequoia, Wendy, would any of you want to start us with that?
Sure. So as some library goers may be aware, the Redpath McLennan complex will be going under renovations for about an estimated 3 years as of early 2024 prepare for McGill's Fiat Lux library project. And books are going to be moved off island. They're recommending that people do interlibrary loans, which is basically when you get your books delivered, and it takes a bit longer.
The interlibrary loan, is it like just between like Quebec libraries, or does it go further than that?
I've had a book coming from Ottawa.
Oh, really?
Yeah, so it's definitely, I feel like they could even maybe coming from, you know, the US, I'm not sure, but it's definitely across Canada, because we got a special Quebec system, but it's definitely broader than that if, you know, the book is not available in Quebec. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
So sometimes, it's definitely not a perfect system, because it's, you know, it can take like a week or two for the book to arrive, which is not convenient when you have a research paper due like soon.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And not all of us are on the ball like that.
Definitely not. For sure. Yeah. And yeah, I guess also one of the arguments for moving the books off the island is that many of the books are now available online, which is true, but not all of them, and sometimes it's if you have like so much readings to do, like doing them on a computer is exhausting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. I want to ask you guys about like how you feel about the whole ebook, like PDF online readings and stuff. I mean, there's an argument for the fact that it's way more financially accessible. Like nowadays, you know, profs, they're just like, yep, you know, here's a PDF. You can read it. I'll upload all the readings. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to make you go down to LeJames and buy like the course pack or whatever. I mean, like sometimes they still do that, but like, you know, for a lot of my courses, I feel like they're just a lot of, you know, online text. And even if you are forced to buy a book, you can just go on like Z Library or something, you know.
Yeah.
I don't endorse Z Library. No, I'm kidding. For legal reasons. But what do you guys think of that?
I definitely haven't bought many books for my classes, mostly because they are so expensive. It's actually crazy. Even if it's a novel, because I'm in English literature.
Oh, okay.
So they
have to buy a lot of books.
Exactly, because it's never going to be just one novel. Yeah. It's always like at least 6 to 10. Mm. So if they're all $20-$25 each, it adds up to a lot. So definitely I've been reading online. But if the book is available at the library, like I will definitely check it out, because it's so much, you know, better, I think. Mm-hmm. And also I like browsing the shelf when I'm doing research.
I love browsing. That is the thing that I think I'm going to miss most about the library, which is there is something like really fun about just like feeling like the pages and like actually, I don't know, like just like not getting a headache from looking at a screen for like 10 hours straight.
Yeah.
But like there's something awesome about when you go to the library and you find the book that you're looking for, and then you like see the 5 books next to it and you're like, whoa, this is like what I'm writing about. And it's just, I don't know. It's awesome.
Yeah. That I love that too.
Yeah.
I wonder if it's like, have you guys heard that maybe this is a stretch, but for like streaming platforms, it's like you think you have like so much access to all these different movies and TV shows, but actually like there's so many like shows and things that like haven't been digitized that you just don't realize that you like cannot access at all, or you have to like go search, I don't know, some archive. So I wonder if it's like the ebook, like what is being digitized and what's not. I don't know.
Oh, that is
such
a good point.
Yeah, because like I feel like for a research book, it depends on the field of study. You know, I feel like if it's sciences, it's good to get the last research. So that's probably available online. But like I was doing a paper on Shakespeare at some point, and it's like, you know, I feel like something that would say is that what's that, you know, was written 50 years ago, it's still very relevant. The text hasn't changed. So, yeah, many of those resources haven't been digitized because they are so niche. So, and like through the library website or internet in general, it's hard to get and to find those resources. So sometimes, yeah, browsing the shelf is the easiest way to get to those resources.
It is. And the other thing is, I remember, like, I had so much fun one night in the library with my friends. Like, this was, it was, like, super late at night. There was no one there. And we were just, like, going through these, like, old slide reels or something. Like, they were in, the cabinets or whatever. And then we were looking at, like, these, I don't even know what to call them, like, slides, I guess. Like, under the big projection thing, you know, and it magnifies it. And, like, all these, like, newspapers from like the 40s or whatever, and they just had super like unhinged like ads and like weird call outs, and it's just like fascinating, you know. So, you know, like there's definitely charms to like the library, you know. And
Like the physical space itself, I feel like there's so much lore to McLennan and Redpath like space. I don't know, like as a space for students.
It's more than I mean, you know, I feel like a library is sure about books, but it's also a study space.
It is. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It is.
We have like 3 minutes.
Yeah.
3 minutes.
Oh my God, time flies.
It did. Yeah.
Yeah, but also I think there were Miguel was mentioning that they would keep a smaller collection of the books that are checked out the most often, which is fair. I mean, you know, it just makes sense that, sure, there are so many books that haven't been checked out in 20, 30 years. Maybe that's a good idea to move them away to give students a better and bigger space. But they will definitely be missed, even though they are available a click away. But it doesn't feel the same.
But where will people go?
that's the big question, right? Because
there's like, and you go into like McLennan Redpath, like it is, especially during a certain point of the year, it is packed. Like it is so packed.
And it is the biggest place.
And it's a huge library.
Yeah.
So it's interesting. I wonder, I'm sure people are going to start getting creative about, you know, where they'll go. I wanted to give a shout out to Milton B. If anyone, I feel like I spent so many nights in Milton B, so I wonder and they're already so packed too. So anyways, I wonder where those new spots are going to crop up. You know, I'm sure people are going to get creative.
Yeah, because people were talking about the school, I never had to pronounce that, the school at
Schuler. Yeah, I've actually never, I haven't gone since it's opened.
It is really nice.
I should go.
I don't want to say it's great, but it kind of is. But it's already crowded.
Yeah.
So
really?
It's definitely not going to replace McLennan.
Yeah.
It's better for sure. Like it's great to have a brand new space, but it's much smaller. Mm-hmm. So it's not going to fill the gap. That McLennan is going to leave.
Oh, what getting so sentimental.
Oh my God. So many nights and days and hours spent there.
We've been through so much together. Yeah. Okay, we've made it to the final minute of our programming.
And we have a wonderful website.
Thank you guys so much for listening.
Where you can get all the information you need to know about this conflict.
It is on gaza.org. So,
and he ends his
communique,
his email, by saying, do not underestimate your individual power to act.
Yeah, well, I mean,
that's all for today of the hour. I'm Sama Ilibiari.
Thank you for listening. Every first Friday of the month. So look out for that. And then, I guess we might be a little bit on All Things McGill.
Oh, sure.
Shout out.
You're listening to
Great
CKUT.
Show with Tituan.
The following is a previously broadcast program.
Also, be sure to check
out
Jules' show, Local Journalism Initiative Stories, which airs Tuesday, 5 to 6. That's also like another great way to catch up on news and maybe catch some of the news.
I thought the other show was coming. It's okay.
Does it start at like 6:01?
I don't know. Sometimes it's not very precise. It's
not. Anyways, so that's
a lot of fun. Despite all little.
Oh, Jackie. Okay. The other show has started. Na lo ma li to khan.